from the studios of WAER.
And he's standing up into the goal line. Touchdown, Syracuse.
Battle gets a screen, pull up, is good. Tyus Battle from 20 feet, and with 2.5 on the clock, Syracuse leads by one.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside. He scores the game winner. Give the assist to Don Madonna. Syracuse wins 11-10.
Comes the Ostrom Avenue podcast.
To Boeheim, quick trigger three from the top. He knocks it down, and we're tied at Spectrum Center.
15 left. He shoots and scores. Tucker Dornovic.
Perhaps the biggest upset in program history comes on Friday the 13th.
And now, your hosts, Brendan Mortensen and Owen Valentine.
Vito looks downfield, pressured, and he's sacked in the backfield. Rushed by Lemonnier near side, DeVito scrambles to get back to the line of scrimmage. Lemonnier had his way that time on Carlos Federello, the redshirt freshman.
Right now they're getting pressure on DeVito, and this offense just looks really rusty right now.
Looks for somebody to pass through, slides down, and he's hit as he slides. He'll lose about 3 yards.
Takes the snap, pass all the way, steps up in the pocket, and he's wrapped down for a sack.
Takes the snap, looks to that near side, now looks far. Here comes the rush, and he's swallowed up in the backfield.
Pocket collapses, rolls out right. He's got to run. Isaiah Simmons in the backfield to drop him. Pocket collapses on him. He's tripped up in the backfield.
Steps up in the pocket, and he's sacked. Their third sack of the game. They bring pressure, and he's sacked once again. Back-to-back sacks for Clemson.
That's a call that came along your airwaves often over the first 3 weeks. Tommy DeVito sacked. Tommy DeVito sacked far too frequently. That's what we're going to be talking about here today. The offensive line struggles for Syracuse football. Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue podcast. I'm Brendan Mortensen alongside Owen Valentine. A little more somber after Saturday's loss to Clemson.
Yeah, I think it was somber after Maryland, and then the saving grace was that just 1 week away, you had this monumental game in recent Syracuse football history in terms of the first sellout in the Carrier Dome since 1998. 50,000 plus were in the dome for Clemson, the top ranked team in the nation. It was rocking for a little bit.
That
opening kickoff was pretty crazy, and the interceptions got things a little bit loud, but there wasn't that one play to really let everyone break through.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final score, obviously, leading to that disappointment.
Yeah, final score not great. Final score of 41-6. Syracuse falls to number one Clemson. But I guess if you're going to look at the bright side, the games don't get harder from there. I mean, you can't really get harder than number one Clemson. But one of the biggest issues in that game that we're going to break down today was the play of the offensive line. That has been, sadly, a theme throughout the season, is that the offensive line has not been very good, aside from week one. But week one was against Liberty.
Yeah.
And they weren't even particularly great in that game either. So let's take a look into it. The week one starters on the offensive line, you've got Cervase, Adams, Sam Heckel at center. He's going to be an important one. Remember that name. Dakota Davis, and then Vettorello at right tackle. Those were the five starters that we figured and assumed would be the starters throughout the entire season, would be if there were no injuries. And in that game, they played well. Syracuse had 44 rushing attempts for 192 yards and three touchdowns. DeVito was not great in that game. Some of it was on DeVito. Some of it was on the pressure.
Yeah, I this was the struggle game. And I remember coming on to talk about just who was to blame for, 24-0 win. It's hard to say offensive struggle. But the offense didn't look great. It was definitely worrisome, especially in that first half. Things started to figure themselves out throughout that second half, but it wasn't pretty. Tommy DeVito just about 50% passing in that game, and it was a struggle for him. He was getting pressured a lot, and it kind of showed the recurring theme that we've gotten through the first three games of the season. He's had to be very elusive and evasive in the pocket to even be able to get throws off, and it's really come back to haunt him, and it comes down to the offensive line simply just not getting him enough time. You talked about the starting lineup on the line for that game, and to look at that, it's even different from in mid-July, the depth charts that came out and what was supposed to be not a great offensive line unit, but one that combines a little bit of experience in Heckel and Aaron Service and even Evan Adams, but they've lost a couple of pieces. People have been mixed around, and it's a completely different look. You've got people switching sides. You've got people switching positions, and it's reflected in the play so far this season.
And it's important to note as well, we'll go through the sack numbers that the offensive line has given up, and those aren't really reflective of the offensive line itself, because there's been a lot of plays where Tommy DeVito has to scramble out of the pocket, and he's not as effective out of the pocket. He's not. This isn't Eric Dungy that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
If we were looking at a team last year, okay, the offensive line doesn't have to be fantastic. Obviously, you still want the offensive line to be good, but Tommy DeVito is much more of a, okay, I need to stand in the pocket, I need to set my feet, I need to deliver my throw, and it's going to be on target. And we've seen Tommy DeVito make a lot of throws this year that an Eric Dungy-type quarterback wouldn't be able to make from the pocket. Mm-hmm. I mean, DeVito is a really good pocket passer, but he's got to have the time to do it. And yes, there aren't a ton of sacks in this Week 1 victory over Liberty, but the offense did not look great. It was just 3-0 after the first quarter, 10-0 at half. That's not what you expect from a Syracuse high-powered offense against this Liberty team. 368 yards of total offense, not great. Two interceptions from DeVito. How much of that do you blame on DeVito, and how much of it do you blame on the offensive line is again, more up for discussion.
Yeah.
And only two sacks allowed. But there were a lot of plays where DeVito was under pressure, had to roll out, wasn't able to set his feet, and didn't make a good throw. And you can contribute a lot of those incompletions to that pressure, to the fact that he had to roll out of the pocket and had to make an off-balance throw somewhere.
Yeah, the two interceptions and only two sacks, I believe, right, is not too alarming. I mean, obviously, you don't want to see your quarterback with two interceptions, but there were also fumbles in this game.
Right.
And when you look at that and see that, you know, it's not a perfect game, and to see your quarterback dropping the ball, it shows the pressures. When you're getting pressured, play in and play out, especially every time you go to drop back, the margin of error becomes so much smaller and mistakes can be exploited that much more. And that's exactly what you saw in Week 1. Even though Syracuse does get the win, it wasn't, I mean, the questions about offensive line, about the offensive line specifically, and then Tommy DeVito really started to arise, and everyone kind of gave the, myself included, give him a couple weeks. I mean, let them do this exponential kind of progression into Clemson from weeks
right.
1 through 3. And as you look at the progression, they had to learn really quickly, and they didn't. They're getting there occasionally. There are moments where you've seen really bright spots. I go back to that Liberty game, the Mo Neal 50-plus yard rushing touchdown. You watch the offensive line, everyone does exactly what they're supposed to do.
Right.
They all execute, and they create a huge gap for Neal, and it shows in the touchdown. They have not been able to do that consistently, and that's really what the issue is. And it kind of goes back to when you look at last year's offensive line, it was really a six-man group. The five starters and then Sam Heckel off the bench was pretty much playing any position
anywhere.
You could
yep.
think. Getting close to 500 snaps as the backup center, left guard, and right guard last year. So pretty much doing everything for the O-line. And they graduate three of them, and Heckel's hurt.
Right.
So you've now got two guys in Aaron Service and in Evan Adams got some minutes. But when you look at this team, there is so much turnaround, and there's so much they lack that camaraderie that I think you had last year because of how experienced the line was. And when you look at an offensive line, one of the most important factors in my mind, and I think a lot of people's mind, is even maybe comparable to your ranking. So as a four-star offensive lineman is great, I think that a group of five offensive linemen that have played together for a couple of years is even more valuable than the rankings itself.
Absolutely, and communication is vital on any offensive line. Like, if you've got four guys in front of you and they're all rushing the quarterback, that's fine. You can deal with that. But then all of a sudden you play a more complex defense like a Maryland, like a Clemson. You've got a nickel corner blitzing. All right, who's picking that up? You've got a middle linebacker blitzing in the A-gap. All right, who's picking that up? There has to be good communication on that offensive line, and having all of that turnaround is only a recipe for disaster. And that's what we're going to look at going into week two and week three, where, yes, this offensive line group was the same in weeks two and three, but you lose maybe your most important piece in Sam Heckel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he is the most versatile member of the offensive line. He has the most experience. If there was one guy that you were to pick on that offensive line to go down, he would probably be the last one.
Yeah.
So let's look at the week two starters. You've got Vettorello, who moves over from the right tackle position to the left tackle position. Left guard stays Evan Adams. And then Service, I'm sorry, I said Service earlier. I know it's wrong. I know it's wrong. In my head, I was like, it's Service. It's not Service, but I said it anyway. Service bumps from left tackle into center because he's another one who's versatile. He can mm-hmm. play different positions on that offensive line. So it goes Vettorello, Adams, Service, Davis stays at right guard. And then you've got Ryan Alexander bumping in at right tackle. And he didn't get any snaps week one, I don't think. Not an experienced tackle. So that's just somebody that you're completely throwing in. He's a redshirt senior, so he does have experience with the team, but he's a grad transfer from South Alabama.
Yeah, he started 27 games for South Alabama, but it's still like it contributes to that turnover that we were talking about.
Right.
In that these are all brand new pieces that you just haven't played together. It's kind of like in baseball throwing a pitcher on the mound who's never worked with this catcher, and the catcher doesn't even know what pitches they have.
Right.
There's just so much that they need to continue to learn about each other, and you thought that that was going to happen in preseason. And as much as that was an emphasis for Babers in the offseason, when you come into week one and you lose, as you were saying, one of your most vital pieces in Sam Heckel, the whole camaraderie and that whole upward momentum kind of goes down the drain for a little bit. And you've now got to start from scratch, moving three guys to different positions because of the injury.
Yep.
It's like a merry-go-round in there whenever someone goes down just because of the lack of depth. So in order to get a somewhat comprehensive O-line in there, you've got to move guys out of their natural spots, move guys out of the spots where they've got 20, 30, almost 35 starts for certain guys, and to bring them into other positions and take them out of what they've been working on and where they're used to being with this group. We talked about the inexperience and how it's so difficult to work with new guys that you're not too familiar with. Throw in the fact that from one half to another, you've got different guys on either end of you because of how many guys are moving positions and how often. It's just basically a mixing bowl for chaos. And that's what's held them back. They lack that communication, as you were saying. They're not able to pick guys up. And if they're not going to be able to figure things out, I think as we will take a look ahead to week four later on, if they can't figure it out in week four against Western Michigan, one of the weaker defenses they'll play, there are some question marks that are definitely going to be raised and some panic buttons that might be slapped.
Well, there's question marks already, or else we wouldn't be talking about it
here.
Fair enough. But that panic button might be slammed down on this offensive line. So let's look at week two. Only 29 rushing attempts, which is understandable considering how that game went. You've got to throw the ball a lot even to stay competitive. 29 rushing attempts for just 70 yards and under 2.5 yards per carry. Not great.
No.
Not great. And Tommy DeVito in that game threw for 300 yards, did have 3 touchdowns, had that bad interception, which again, you can put some of the blame on DeVito. It was not a good throw by any means. He made the same mistake against Clemson, which we'll talk about next week in our episode talking about Tommy DeVito with WAER alum Craig Hoffman. That interception was not great, but also would not have happened if DeVito wasn't forced out of the pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Maryland gets 4 sacks in that game, which, again, could have been a lot more if DeVito wasn't able to roll out. And then week three, against Clemson, this is the big one.
Yeah.
Clemson, I will say, is not a good measuring stick.
Correct.
Because they have elite talent on that defensive line. They have elite talent everywhere. I mean, like, if you have Isaiah Simmons blitzing up the middle, what are you going to do with that? That guy's a freak. He is one of the best football players in the country. Probably going to be a top 10 pick this year. Clemson has some amazing talent on that defense.
Yeah.
And for an offensive line that had just 1 week of working together against Maryland where they did not do a good job,
mm-hmm.
this was, how do I put this, a lot worse.
Yeah.
A lot worse.
And I mentioned the kind of exponential start to the season in terms of difficulty, and the sacks are a perfect exponential curve. 2 sacks week 1 against Liberty, 4 sacks week 2 against Maryland, 8 sacks. Actually, I messed up. That's not exponential, but it is growing at
is
a pretty
growing.
High rate.
Yeah.
As you look at those numbers, it goes from 2 to 4 to 8, just doubling every week. I don't think Western Michigan's going to get 16 sacks, so
I hope not.
That statistic's going to drop. But when you see those numbers and just see, and Clemson is an outstanding football team, I think
right.
because of how hyped that game was, a lot of people overlooked that. Despite the last 2 seasons with Syracuse and Clemson, Syracuse is not supposed to beat Clemson. And Clemson is supposed to blow Syracuse out of the water. That makes sense. But I still think that the O-line could have held its own a little bit better. I feel like every time DeVito dropped back, and it was the same story the first 2 weeks. The dropbacks equaled pressures, and the pressures forced DeVito out of the pocket. And when you force a pocket passer out of the pocket, mistakes are made. And that's kind of the recipe that's been reining them back every time that they've had a little bit of potential. You look at 2 opportunities where Syracuse starts inside of the 10-yard line. Against Clemson, interception on the first play as DeVito's forced out of the pocket, 3 rushes stuffed at the line of scrimmage, and a pass play where no one's open because there's pressure and everything, and Syracuse not able to gain positive yards, and it's exploited in the red zone too, which is really scary because when you're going scoreless in red zone attempts, that is a sign that this team is not going to be able to win football games down the stretch.
A lot of not good things, you could say, happened against that Clemson Tiger defense. And to talk a little more about those not good things, we're going to talk with our Valiant sports director. He did play-by-play for this Syracuse and Clemson game. It's our man Jack McMullen.
Now we're joined by Jack McMullen. He was on the call for Syracuse and Maryland as well as Syracuse versus Clemson. Thanks so much for joining us, Jack.
Absolutely.
So first and foremost, just a general question. You've seen the team the last 2 weeks. You've been there on the call. What have you seen in general from the offensive line?
It's a work in progress, and I think that is something that won't change by Western Michigan. I think that it's something that has to continue to grow, and I think that this will be a down year for the offensive line. You saw last year, I mean, you had guys like Coda Martin on that offensive line that aren't there right now, and Sam Heckel. That guy should be there right now, but he's not there right now. So that is there are just a whole bunch of injuries, and then also the graduation thing kind of gets in the way too. So that is it's a tough pill to swallow with the O-line for sure. But I actually had a chance to talk to Coach Babers. I had a chance to talk to Coach Babers earlier today, and he said that, you know, Tommy's just getting touched a lot. He's just getting hit, and he's getting hurried a lot. And that definitely has something to say about the 15 rushing yards that Syracuse had. And no, that's not 50. That's 15 rushing yards that Syracuse had against Clemson. So this offensive line is certainly a work in progress, but the thing that really stinks about it right now is that it's bleeding into the passing game. It's bleeding into the running game.
And you said work in progress. So you've seen them back-to-back weeks now, and I know the stats don't necessarily show it, but Clemson, a far superior opponent to Maryland. Have you seen improvements over the past 2 weeks in any aspect?
It's hard to see improvements when the opponent gets so much better. You know what I mean? Maryland was a top 25 team before they lost to Temple, so that makes that loss look terrible now for Syracuse. But Clemson is the best team in the country, and I don't think that there's an argument. And Jonathan Hoppe, the guy who was on the call with me, we were talking after the game, and I don't think that there's any argument to be made that Clemson is not the best team in the country. Granted right. that we've only watched Alabama, Georgia, LSU on TV, and yeah, that new LSU offense is pretty fun with, you know, Joe Burrow throwing for 400 yards. What's
Jack
going on?
Jack McMullen, huge Joe Burrow guy.
Well, I'm a huge Joe Burrow guy. The fact that Matthew Dellavedova is his favorite athlete makes Joe
awesome.
Burrow my favorite athlete. It's like the transitive property. But I mean, Clemson, they have maybe the best quarterback in the country, although he's not playing like it right now.
But talent-wise,
the best running back in the country. I don't think there's an argument there. And then one of the best linebackers in the country in Isaiah Simmons. And, yeah, they graduate 4 graduate/ draftee-ate.
Right. They had three defensive players drafted in the top 17, one of which was number four.
And they were all on the D-line, too. So the fact that you can replenish the D-line with the number four recruit in the class of 2018, like Xavier Thomas, that's ridiculous. And that speaks to what Dabo has done. So he has maybe the best defense in the country, maybe the best offense in the country, and usually that equals the best team in the country.
So you mentioned him once. We talked about it earlier in the podcast, and that's Sam Heckel. He has not played the last 2 weeks. How big of an impact has him not being in that offensive line made in their overall play?
It's huge, and it's not just because the center. It's, you know, Aaron Service has to go back to center. That's fine because Aaron Service was the center last year. That moves him from the left tackle spot that he was practicing at, with Heckel practicing at center. So that's not too much of a downgrade from Heckel to Service, but where you lose is at left tackle, because now Ryan Alexander, the grad transfer from South Alabama, he has to slide into the starting O-line when he's frankly not ready. And something that Dino has keyed in on with the offensive line in particular is the endurance of that offensive line. And, you know, he said this offense can only work as fast as the slowest offensive lineman. Right now it's Ryan Alexander because he's in his first year in the system. So forcing him into the wrinkle, as well as Carlos Vettorello, who may be a year premature, that's a really tough pill to swallow when you're trying to contend right now with an offensive line that's not ready.
Dino said 4 to 6 weeks for them to be ready, to get that cohesion and to be able to work well as a unit. Week four is this week. They've got a simpler game than their past 2 weeks in Western Michigan, although they're not necessarily a blowover game.
I mean, ESPN's FPI has Western as a 66% favorite.
Yeah.
That hurts.
That's crazy to think about.
Is Syracuse able to work out the offensive line kinks this week or next week with Holy Cross? And then week six is NC State. You've got ACC play lingering again.
This is the stretch of days where you have to do it. And you've got Western Michigan, a game that's really tough. And with a veteran O-line like they had last year, they only beat Western by 13 points. Granted, that was in Kalamazoo and you're in the dome this time, but you've put together two not great performances, especially from the offensive line. You've put together two bad performances against Maryland and then against Clemson. Western's not a rollover. It would be better for Syracuse if it went Holy Cross then Western, because then you can get your feet under yourself. But Western, Holy Cross, bye. Those are the three biggest weeks to work out all the wrongs in your system, because then you go to Raleigh for an 8 p.m. Thursday night game. That's lining up to be an incredibly hard game.
So we know Dino Babers doesn't play the blame game with his team.
No.
And
he puts
the
blame on himself.
Right. He puts the blame either on himself or he says that it's an entire team effort.
And we don't deserve him.
We don't.
Keep going.
We love Dino. So one of the things that he said after the Clemson game is the offensive line got a lot of criticism because they gave up 8 sacks, much like Syracuse got a ton of praise week one for getting those 8 sacks, but now it's flipped. The offensive line gives up those 8. And he mentioned specifically that not all 8 were on the offensive line, that there were, I think he said specifically that there were 2 sacks that were on somebody who wasn't on the offensive line. But I want to talk a little bit about what did he say. I know you talked with him today a little bit. What did he mention to you about, hey, like, I know the offensive line has struggled, but it's not all them. And where is it bleeding into other aspects of the offense?
You know, he likes to talk a lot about the macro and a lot about what the team as a whole can do. And I mean, he's a mental guy. That's all he is. He's an emotional, he's a mental leader. Yeah, he's incredible with his strategy. And he came in and he implemented this lightning quick offense that hasn't been that quick this year, if you guys haven't noticed, because, and we're going back to that saying, this offense can only work as fast as your slowest offensive lineman. They've had to work pretty slow. It's the offensive line that's triggering everything else. Something that, you know, I was actually talking to Noah Eagle about yesterday. How about that? Former AER guy, but he said, you know, people really aren't talking about the fact that Dante Strickland was one of the best pass protectors and one of the best blockers as a running back that Syracuse has seen in recent memory. So that's another aspect. You know, Mo Neal, Abdul Adams, Jarvion Howard, who's not on the field that often. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to see him on the field more because I think he's a stud. He's a stud. You know, I think Mo Neal and Abdul Adams really need to step up when they're doing their pass blocking. But at the end of the day, if you only rush for 15 yards, I mean, the blame has to go on the five guys up front, no? So I think that that may be Coach Babers trying to avoid a curveball. I'm not exactly sure, but I think that, you know, the majority of why those eight sacks were given up were because of the offensive line. You can't ask Mo Neal and Abdul Adams to block Xavier Thomas. You just can't because he's too good. He's too big. It feels like D. Rose, the MVP D. Rose, like too big, too fast, too strong, too good, like that type of thing. And I think that, you know, a D-line like Clemson, they are too D. Rose for Mo Neal to stop.
So, leave it to Jack McMullen to throw in a Chicago basketball reference in the Syracuse football podcast.
I don't even think D. Rose is a Chicago basketball reference. I think that's just a basketball reference.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
So you've got Western Michigan, and you said Clemson is that powerhouse. Western Michigan good, not Clemson by any stretch of the leg.
Right.
But you've got a little bit of experience on the line in Evan Adams and Aaron Service. Is there anything that you see out of them or that they might be able to contribute to the other guys to help boost them up?
Owen, it's all mental. I like to think, and I'm a very, you know, some may call me a head case, but I think that a lot of things are mental, and I think that mental bleeds into physical so often. So I think that all these guys, there's a reason you're playing at Syracuse under Dino Babers, right? If you're on the O-line at Syracuse, chances are you're really freaking good at football, right?
Right.
So I think it's a headspace type thing. It's like a pitcher who can't throw the ball over to first base. John Lester, there's your other Chicago reference. But it's almost like a pitcher who can't throw the ball over to first base. If Evan Adams and Aaron Service and, I mean, Sam Heckle can even talk.
Yeah.
It's not like his vocal cords are broken. It's just something else, I guess. But it's if those veterans can somehow light a fire under a guy like Ryan Alexander, who does have the veteran mindset. I mean, the guy's older than anybody else on the O-line. He's just new to the program. And you can light that fire in a Carlos Vettorello type. I see no reason why it's a quick mental switch. And we talk about this stuff all the time, right? I know all three of us have had, you know, those greater human truth discussions because we all suck, right? But it's, you know, it's one of those things where if you do something wrong 100 times, it's not as beneficial as doing something right 3 times. So do it right 3 times in practice, and then chances are on Saturday you're going to remember how to do something right.
Jack, final expectations for this Saturday against Western Michigan?
More than 15 rushing yards.
That's good.
I'll leave it at that. Yeah.
Well, that's a positive for Syracuse.
I think that they can win this game. I think that the offensive line had a chance to look themselves in the mirror after that Clemson game. I think it was probably a really long Sunday morning for those O-linemen. I don't know if it was film or if they were just kind of laying in bed staring at the ceiling and saying, man, that stunk. But, you know, I probably would do that. But I think that it was a good chance for self-reflection. It was a good chance to really ask yourself, who do you want to be this year? And I think that they come out a bit rejuvenated, and I think that they win this game.
Jack McMullen, thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely, guys.
Thanks so much again to Jack McMullen. So basically the gist of what I'm getting here is the offensive line is not very good, has not been very good. And a little subtle flex here from me. I'm a big numbers guy, big stats guy, sports analytics minor here at the wonderful Syracuse University. So I want to take a look at some next level stats, going deeper into this offensive line, some fun analytics things. Does that sound like fun?
I love analytics, so you can start it off and play off of that.
All right. So first stat we're going to look at is sack rate. Pretty much exactly what it sounds. It's the unadjusted rate with which the quarterback is sacked.
Yeah.
Seems simple enough. Syracuse gives up a sack 14.3% of the time.
14.3%. You know what that is?
It's good for 128th in the country. That's what it is.
You know how many teams there are in the country?
Probably not that much more than 128.
130. The third worst sack rate in the NCAA.
Is that good?
Terrible.
Confirmed not good. So Syracuse, 128 out of 130 teams in giving up sacks. So that's not great.
No.
For a team that is competing for a bowl in the ACC, your offensive line probably shouldn't be 128th ranked in anything.
No. And that's a tough stat to get past because it just shows that even though one of my biggest compliments of DeVito has been his ability to avoid the sack,
so
he's
if DeVito
still
is
getting
avoiding
sacked.
Them,
yeah.
If DeVito is avoiding them and Syracuse is still 128th in the country in percentage of sacks allowed per play, if DeVito wasn't as mobile as he has been, Syracuse could very well be 130th out of 130 teams.
Yeah. You put a quarterback who is not able to avoid the rush, and I don't think that's really what anyone expected DeVito to be, but he's done a good job at it.
And he's had to.
Yeah, but he's still getting sacked upwards of 14% of plays that he drops back. That's
ridiculous.
It's a ridiculous number. Yeah, and those numbers hinder the rushing stats for Syracuse too, because sacks count as negative yards now.
Right.
So,
and that's just the first number I'm throwing out.
Yeah.
We've got a whole lot more stats.
All right, fire the next one.
So this one is going to be opportunity rate. We're ramping up the advancement of these stats here. Opportunity rate is the percentage of carries that gain at least 4 yards. So essentially the offensive line does its job.
Okay.
Is essentially what opportunity rate is. The opportunity rate for Syracuse is 42.7%, which sounds pretty good until you realize that it's 92nd in the country.
Yeah.
Not good.
It's a better stat than I thought they'd be at, if I'm being completely honest.
Because it sounds decent.
Because
42.7% of carries gaining 4 yards.
4 yards on 42.7% of carries does sound good, but when you mix in the tackles for loss and the penalties and the sacks, 4 yards per carry isn't even enough.
No.
So when you look at that number and to see that only 2 out of 5 plays get you 4+ yards, with all of those things compiling on top of it, it's a very alarming number, and it shows in the ranking being borderline outside the top 100 out of 130 teams is very alarming. So when you look at that number and the numbers that we've already looked at, plus the numbers that you still got in the back pocket, it's very just concerning from a statistical standpoint, because this is a team that is just struggled with the offensive line all season, and it has not really shown too much upward growth. And so growth is one of those big things that you would expect. You've got young guys, you're going to give them that learning curve, but the learning curve hasn't really been working, and there's not been too much change, at least in my eyes.
And one of the numbers that compiles into that is the stuff rate, which is the next number I've got for you, which is the percentage of carries where the runner was stopped at or behind the line of scrimmage. So you've got the opportunity rate where the runner gains at least 4 yards, sitting at 42.7%, and the stuff rate where the runner stopped at or behind the line of scrimmage, Syracuse comes in at 21.3%, which is 94th in the country. So you've got 42% of the carries gaining at least 4 yards, and then 21% getting stopped for negative yards or no yards.
Yeah, and that just adds into the opportunity rate that we were just talking about. When you're getting stuffed at the line, you've now got to boost that opportunity rate. You've got to be able to get those 4+ yard carries, especially when you're at a 2nd and 10, 3rd and 8, situations like that, 3rd and long situations, 2nd and long situations. If you can't gain positive yards on 2nd down, it is detrimental to your team, especially because Syracuse was pretty terrible in week 1 and week 2 in execution on 3rd downs. And I'm not going to throw Clemson numbers in there because I think that it's tough to bash a team for their performance against Clemson.
Right.
So when you just look at those numbers alone, though, it still struggles. It's still troublesome for Syracuse. And so if they can't change these numbers and even create 1 or 2 opportunities a game for Syracuse to get that 20-25-yard rush or something of notability or relevance, these numbers are going to stay low and they're not going to be able to really boost themselves at all.
And I've got a fun stat for you next. But first, I want to thank footballoutsiders.com. That's where I'm getting all these fun numbers from. because I'm going to be honest, I didn't crunch all the numbers myself. I'm relying on footballoutsiders.com here for providing these next-gen stats. So thank you to footballoutsiders.com. But the last one I've got for you, this one's going to be an explainer. It's line yards. So this is essentially the yards gained that are attributed to the offensive line and only the offensive line. So basically what this is, so it's yards gained running the football. And the offensive line gets 100% of the credit for rushing yards between 0 and 3 yards. So that is essentially saying the offensive line got the push up to 3 yards.
Okay.
The offensive line gets 50% of the credit for a rush between 4 and 8 yards. Because you're assuming there that the running back probably makes one move, something like that. So the offensive line gets 50% of the credit for the yards gained there. Anything over 8 yards qualifies as a highlight opportunity where the runner gets the credit for the yards gained. So the offensive line very well could have done a really great job of opening up a hole for the running back and getting over 8 yards, but those yards are going to go to the running back because most of the time, if there's a big gain like that, it's probably the running back doing something flashy. And then lost yardage is held at 125% value. So the lost yards for the offensive line count more than those 0 to 3 yards. I know it's a complicated stat, but it basically just means how many yards is the offensive line responsible for? I didn't necessarily understand the over 8 yards thing, but it's something that's attributed to all of the line of scrimmages, all of the offensive lines in the country, so it's not just something that would throw off Syracuse's numbers. So with all that explained, Syracuse comes in at 2.46 line yards, which ranks 84th in the country.
And you know who's only two spots behind them?
Who's that?
Liberty. The team that Syracuse walloped and was really the only time that there were true bright spots for Syracuse. Yes, there's a couple from game to game, but the only time that there was like an entire unit really getting credited for playing outstanding was against Liberty, and Liberty's only 0.02 of a yard behind. So that just goes to show that Syracuse is not playing like a high-level team. They're not playing like a high-level offensive line when you come into the season as a top 25 team. And I know it was a bit of a loose top 25 because of last year's performance,
right,
not necessarily because of this year's personnel. But when you take that into account, this is a team with high expectations, expected to finish second in the ACC and play in the Orange Bowl this year. And they're barely beating out Liberty in statistical categories. That is very alarming.
So basically what you need to take from these advanced stats, Syracuse offensive line hasn't just been bad, it's been very bad. Like worst in the country bad. Not the worst in the country, but among the worst in the country. There is the best rank that they have for any of these advanced stats is 66th in the nation. And then after that number 66, they don't have a single stat that ranks higher than 80th. Everything else falls somewhere in the high 80s, getting into that 120-something range even. So none of the stats are better than 66th in the nation.
66th in the nation is the peak of the O-line in these statistical categories.
Which
and
is, you're maybe better than half the teams in the country.
Yeah.
At this one thing. And then everything else is bottom third.
Yeah, it just, it goes to show that it's not just the eye test that the offensive line doesn't pass, but it's all statistical categories they have really struggled with. And, I mean, I hope for the sake of the Syracuse season that maybe there is some upward growth and that things start to work out, because you'd hate to see a team come in with such high expectations and really just fall that flat. I hope that there's upward mobility, upward growth, and things start to work out. I think preseason Dino said that you've got to give them 4 to 6 weeks for the offensive line to fully reach that maximum cohesion.
That's in a college football season, 4 to 6 weeks.
Is half your season.
It's half your season.
That
I
is
mean, how much
time
season. Can you give to this offensive line to give them leeway and say, like, all right, they're still figuring things out, stuff like that? Because by the time they figured it out, the season's halfway gone.
Yeah.
And what if you're 1-5 through 6 games of the season because the offensive line can't do anything?
And now you've got a borderline win out to
right.
make a bowl game.
Right.
Yeah. So week 4.
That's a lot to ask.
Week 4 is this week.
This needs to be the turnaround.
Western Michigan, this is the start of the turnaround. This is the start of the offensive line works well together.
It has to be.
They have to show out this week. This is your, you've gone through the obstacle course, your toughest point in the season. You've hit the peak of the mountain.
Right.
You should be able to come down relatively simply and work your way back into it. It's not too steep of a decline. Okay, you've got a huge drop that you don't have to work through. There's an elevator to get you down to the level of Western Michigan as opposed to Clemson. Take advantage of it. Work some things out and really build yourself some upwards momentum because you've got 2 to 3 weeks. I think it's like 2.5 weeks. There's a Thursday game against North Carolina State is your next ACC opponent.
Yep.
Take the 2 weeks and use the lower level playing field and build, grow. Get that cohesion, get that communication down, let Tommy DeVito figure things out. And the only way he can figure things out is if the O-line figures things out. It's like just a domino effect in terms of success. If the O-line can't figure it out, the rushing game is still going to struggle, and the passing game is going to struggle. So it all comes down to the O-line. And I think they can have that start against Western Michigan.
And they have to. The next 2 weeks are a golden opportunity at home against Western Michigan this upcoming Saturday, and then at home against Holy Cross on September 28th. And looking at this Western Michigan defense, the offensive line should have a much easier time. Western Michigan has recorded 7 sacks over their first 3 games. Clemson had 8 last week.
Yeah.
So Western Michigan with less sacks than Clemson had last week against Syracuse. And they're 91st in the country in yards allowed per game. Hey, that kind of sounds like the Syracuse offensive line.
I know. That is
bottom third somewhere. So it's a golden opportunity for this Syracuse offensive line to get some cohesion. We don't know the status of Sam Heckel for this week's upcoming game.
I would assume doubtful. Once again,
he was questionable against Maryland, downgraded to doubtful against Clemson. So we'll see what he is for this upcoming week. But even if he's not in this game, it'll most likely be the 3rd week in a row for this same offensive line unit.
Yeah, which is good for their growth and to kind of take the experience of Evan Adams and Aaron Service, who, although is listed as the left tackle when you take a look at the team and take a peek into the fact that the past 2 seasons where he was getting his starts, his 25 starts, were all at center. So he's got that experience there. And Evan Adams at left guard, now you've got the 3 pieces that you're not so confident in. I think with those two and their experience, they might be able to boost them up, especially in this 2-week lull in the schedule, which leaves Syracuse a lot of opportunity for growth.
Syracuse offensive line needs some growth. Syracuse football needs a win. After back-to-back blowout losses, you can catch all the action this Saturday on WAER starting at 11:30 here on 88.3 FM. We'll have you covered with countdown to kickoff before kickoff at noon against Western Michigan. But that just about wraps things up from us. He's Owen Valentine. I'm Brendan Mortensen. Be sure to catch the Ostrom Avenue podcast. It'll be coming out every Wednesday or Thursday. We're recording it on Wednesday. It might come out either Wednesday or Thursday. We don't know. Next week, we've got WAER alum Craig Hoffman on the show. We'll be talking with him about Tommy DeVito. We'll catch you next time.